Avram Kijai, which are Ram Kijai. Navadweepadam Kijai, Jigalatasami Kijai. Yamunamai Kijai. Shimati Talasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai. Gaura Premananda Hari Hari Vos. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, now we'll speak about Sanatana Goswami. So, Om Ganata Mirandasya Gananjana Shabakaya Chakshura Meditam Yenitasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. What? You get everybody, you get your books. So, as I mentioned before, Sanatana Goswami was the oldest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And I'd like to read a poem that was written by Raghunath Das Goswami in glorification of Sanatana Goswami before we speak about Sanatana Goswami's life. It's Vairagya Yug Bhakti Rasam Prayatnair Apayanam Mamana Bipsumandam Kripambudirya Paradukaduki Sanatanastam Prabhum Ashayambi. The translation is, I was unwilling to drink the nectar of devotional service possessed of renunciation, but Sanatana Goswami, out of his causeless mercy, made me drink it, even though I was unable to do so. Therefore, he is an ocean of mercy. He is very much compassionate to fallen souls like me. Thank you. And thus it is my duty to offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet and take shelter of him. So a little background to this. Actually, Raghunath Das Goswami was serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. And he remained a long time with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to leave the world too. But when Raghunath Das Goswami went to Vrindavan, Sanatana Goswami and other Goswamis of Vrindavan engaged him in telling about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the Goswamis. So in that way he kept Raghunath Das Goswami alive. And of course Raghunath Das Goswami is the acharya of the prayojana aspect of devotional service, which means the ultimate goal, prema bhakti. Where Sanatana Goswami, he is the acharya or the teacher of the first aspect of devotional service, sambandha, which means to understand your connection with Krishna. And Rupa Goswami is the acharya of the second aspect of Krishna consciousness, known as avideya, which means to act in terms of that relationship, such as the aspects of sadhana bhakti. Sanatana Goswami was born in the year 1488, and he was born in a Brahminical family. Actually, his family descended from this great sage, Bharadvaja Muni, who you can read about in the Ramayana and also in the Mahabharata. So he had several brothers and sisters, but the most famous of them were Rupa and Anupama, the two brothers of Sanatana Goswami. So these personalities are liberated souls. So we shouldn't think that these particular individuals were in Maya at any particular time, but they were placed in this situation by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to assist him in his mission. So being liberated souls and being great devotees and Brahminically inclined in a Brahmin family, they were forced to work for the governor of Bengal, whose name was Nawab Hussein Shah. So you may ask, why would great liberated souls, Vaishnavas, work for people who are engaged in, let us say, cruel activities? Because the Nawab Hussein Shah was going out to conquer all the other kingdoms and basically killing people and trying to convert Hindus into Muslims. So you may say, why would they work for such people? Well, the reason is that this Nawab Hussein Shah threatened the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and he said, unless you work for me, he said to Rupa Sanatan, who were known as Dabir Kash and Sakara Balak, unless you work for me, I'm going to kill more people. So Rupa and Sanatan agreed to work. And Sanatan was called Shakara Malik, which means the private secretary to Nawab Hussein Shah. And Rupa Goswami also acted in terms of, as the treasurer, his Dabir Kas, and he was the treasurer and revenue officer, and Balaba, who was in charge of the mint, that means where they made the coins and made the money. So they made their headquarters in a place called Ramakeli. Ramakeli was the capital of Bengal at that particular time. And both of these personalities, as well as their brother, they were great learned scholars. They studied from the brother of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya named Vichaspati. And they learned Sanskrit grammar, and actually Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they learned many different languages too. Sanskrit, Persian, of course Urdu, Bengali, and they were quite learned scholars, as described in the prayers of the six Goswamis by Srinivas Acharya, Nanashastra Vichara Nankinipadosa Dharma Samstapako. Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Shavanyakaro. That they were able to read various religious literatures from various traditions, not only the Vaishnava or Vedic tradition. They were able to read, of course, the Quran and other literatures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles. And their writing illustrates what we call Sat Dharma or Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma means the Dharma or principles that never change. Like Asat Dharma, there's a difference between Asat Dharma and Sat Dharma. For example, even in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have things that are Sat Dharma and some things that are not eternal principles. Can anyone give me an example of something in our movement that's not an eternal principle? This is going to shock you all. No? A dhoti is not an eternal principle. We have it. It helps us remember Krishna. Or some of us, it may not help us remember Krishna, but it helps our dhotis. So, in other words, the essence of Krishna consciousness is not dependent upon things that are not eternal religious principles. You understand that? It's actually a very important point. What's an eternal religious principle? Nobody knows in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, or a principle or a practice. What's an eternal religious practice?
Serve God.
Yeah, I understand that. What? But be more specific. Chanting His name. So it's really important to distinguish between things that are, let's say, not eternal religious principles or rituals that may help us in Krishna consciousness, and rituals that are eternal. Like chanting is an eternal practice. I mean, for example, like what color are you wearing, Gokulendra?
Saffron.
You know why you're wearing that color?
Particularly what you think it represents.
Present what?
I know that it represents fire. This color.
But why specifically? No, you're wearing saffron because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to distinguish between the Mayavadi color red. Think about it. You didn't know that. So you're learning something new today. Because in preaching, generally the sannyasis will wear a very reddish color. But there are many Mayavadi. Everyone knows what a Mayavadi is? A Mayavadi is someone who says, basically, either there's no God, or God is Maya, or I'm God, or you're God, we're all God, or God forbid. You didn't hear that joke? No. Maybe I should go slower. So you catch the humor. So that's a Mayavadi. So the Mayavadis were running around in all this red cloth. You'll see that in India. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to distinguish. And also Bhaktisiddhanta. So he said, let's have saffron instead of red. Okay? But that's not an eternal principle. Neither is the sannyas dress an eternal principle. Because the Goswamis, they would wear short white dhotis. So the reason I'm talking about these things is so we don't become enraptured or attached to externals, thinking this will make me Krishna conscious. It won't. It won't make you Krishna. What will make you Krishna conscious is if you chant Krishna's names with love and devotion. And you can wear a dhoti or sari for 10 million years, you won't become a little bit more Krishna conscious. Not going to make. And you can become Krishna conscious wearing Western dress, Eastern dress. You can. Anyway, as long as you don't wear animal skin. Unless you're a yogi. Then you can wear. If you let the deer die naturally and you wear deer skin. Anyway. So the dress is not important. So I'm trying to distinguish between Sat Dharma and Asat Dharma. So the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they presented Sat Dharma Samstapako, eternal religious principles. And this is really important. Important point to understand so that we do not become sectarian in our approach to other religious traditions. The sectarian aspect of religion causes a lot of fighting, conflicts in the world today, doesn't it? Because people don't see the essence, they just see the external aspect. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, said that when we go to another religious ceremony and we see people doing things a little differently, we should think they are worshiping God in the same way as I'm worshiping God. I'm different structure, but their purpose is exactly the same. We should appreciate like that. Okay. So, when Sanatana Goswami, let's get back to Sanatana Goswami, so I'll talk forever about other topics. So Sanatana Goswami was a very young boy, and when he was very young, he had a dream. And in that dream, a brahmana came to him and gave him a Bhagavatam. And said, if you read this book, you will understand everything about Krishna. Because the Bhagavatam is actually the light that lights the souls in this age of Kali. Krishna Svadamo Bhakate Gama Jnana Visa Kalona Shetrasamesha Purnarko Dunodataha. You know that verse? You heard about it. So, in this age of Kali, now that Krishna has gone to his abode, this is one of the answers to the questions that the sages raised in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Now that Krishna has gone to his abode, what will protect religion? And the answer was this Bhagavat Purana, which is as brilliant as the, what, sun. All right, at least you knew that part. So, anyway, he had this dream. And then in this dream he was given a Bhagavatam and the Brahmin disappeared. And then he woke up and he was basically crying. And then a few minutes later, a few hours later, guess what happened? A brahmana came to him and gave him the Bhagavatam. And he said, take this Bhagavatam and study it, and all perfection will be yours. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Right after having that dream. So he would study this Bhagavatam continually, even though he was engaged. Later on, he was engaged in the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah. They had heard that both him and his brother, they had heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Navadweep, and they had heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas. And they wanted to see him, but they couldn't get away. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time was heading towards Vrindavan. And as he was heading towards Vrindavan, he was accompanied by a large group of people, maybe thousands of people, This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very popular at that time. And as he was accompanied by that large group of people, the Mohammedan governor started to get a little nervous. You know, because here's someone who's a prophet, an incarnation, and this will interfere with our religious practices. But basically, the Mohammedan governor thought that I should be peaceful and not attack this particular individual now because it may cause me trouble. And he was advised like that by some devotees who were serving him at the same time. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived in this village called Ramakeli, and he was seated beneath a tree. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who are Dabhikas and Sakara Malik, approached him at this time, taking straw between their teeth, that is, exhibiting a very humble attitude, and they prayed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we are coming from the most fallen condition. Even though we were born in Brahmin families, we are serving those who are engaged in the most terrible activities, such as meat eating and other activities like that. They considered themselves to be more fallen than Jagai and Madai. They said Jagai and Madai, they were just sinful. But they never served people who were doing horrible activities like we're doing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to them at that time that you too are my eternal servants, and he initiated them right on the spot. He said, now your names are Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And he advised them to remain in their position. He said that Krishna would soon deliver them. And all of Lord's associates, such as Sanatan, as Haridas Thakur, Lord Nityananda, Shivas Thakur, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, they were all there, and they very much appreciated this. So Rupa and Sanatan gave some advice to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They said, we do not think it is a good idea for you to go to Vrindavan, because if you go to Vrindavan with this large group, it will be very inappropriate. They basically said it looks like a circus, you know, all these people surrounding you. So you should go to Vrindavan with just one or two people. So the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted their advice in this regard and turned back at that point and did not go to Vrindavan. Later on, he went to Vrindavan just with one servant. So it's a very interesting lesson for us that Vrindavan is a very special place. It's not meant for, let's say, big showy things. It's meant for developing one's internal relationship with Krishna in a very deep, personal way, as Sanatan Goswami did. So Rupa Goswami, we know, left the government service, but Sanatan Goswami wanted to leave the government service, but he wasn't able to. So he made an excuse so that he could study the Bhagavatam all day long, and his excuse was that he was sick. So he sent a message to the Nawab Hussain Shah that I'm very sick. And the Nawab Hussain Shah sent a doctor to check to see if Sanatan Goswami was sick. And the doctor said, of course, Sanatan Goswami is not sick. He's just putting on an act so he can avoid going to work and read the Bhagavatam. And the Nawab Hussain Shah at that time said, all right, that's enough. You should come with me as I go to Orissa. Orissa is another state in India. And in this way, we'll conquer the land and kill many people. And Sanatan Goswami said, I'm not going to do anything like this. I'm going to remain here. So Sanatan Goswami was put in prison at that time. And when he was put in prison, he was always thinking of a way to escape. Fortunately, his brother Rupa Goswami had left some money with a grocer, that was the bank at that time, so he could bribe his way out of prison. In India, you can get anything with bribery. Anyone who's worked in India knows that. Of course, it's not the ideal system, but that's the way India works. So he bribed his way out of prison, and when he got out of prison, there's the famous story that his servant, he had one servant named Ishan. Ishan kept 8 gold coins. And as they were going through the mountains getting out of Ramakeli, one hotel keeper who was going to help them get out of the mountains understood that he had 8 gold coins and was going to kill him for the 8 gold coins. So Sanatan Goswami, being very intelligent, saw that the hotel keeper was very nice to him. Like if you go someplace and someone's very nice to you, then that means they want something. unless they're actually connected to it somehow or other. You can understand. There's some injunctions like that, that someone who's given you so many sweet words, they're like a thief, because they want to take something or they want to utilize you in so many ways. So, Sanatana Goswami understood this. He offered the hotel keeper the coins, and then he left on his own, leaving his servant behind, went through the mountains. And going through the mountains, he met one of his relatives, who was named Srikant, who was his brother-in-law, and he gave him a very nice woolen blanket, beautiful woolen blanket to utilize. Finally, he arrived in Benares, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. And when he arrived in Benares, there's this interesting story. He knocked on the door where Lord Chaitanya was, which was in the house of a devotee named Chandrasekhar. And at that time, he had a big beard and looked like a Muslim mendicant. And Lord Chaitanya said to Chandrasekhar, "There's a great devotee at your door." And Chandrasekhar opened the door and he said, "No, there's only a Muslim mendicant here." But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, "No, this is a great devotee." And then he said to Sanatana, "Shave your beard and your hair." So Sanatana shaved off his beard and hair and started to wear the dress of a sannyasi, which at that point was, as I mentioned before, a very short, white dhoti, almost like a gamsha. But he still kept the blanket that was given to him, the shawl that was given to him by his brother-in-law. So Lord Chaitanya kept looking at it. He kept looking at the shawl whenever Sanatana was there. And Sanatana realized that I have to give that up. So he went to the bank of the Ganges and he said to a mendicant who had a patchwork shawl. You know what a patchwork shawl is? It means different pieces with holes in it and everything like that. And he said, "I'll trade you. You can have my new shawl for the old shawl." And he did that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased. For many days, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed him on the science of Krishna consciousness in the banks of the Ganges, and instructed him as to his duty to write Vaishnava literatures, particularly the Hari Bhakti Vilas, to elaborate on the duties and behavior of a Vaishnava. And then Sanatana Goswami headed for Vrindavan. When he reached Vrindavan, he discovered that Rupa Goswami wasn't there, so he went to Jagannath Puri to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's a famous story that on the way to Jagannath Puri, he went through the Jatakanda forest, and because he didn't have enough to eat, and it was very hot, and there were many germs and bugs there, he developed all these sores on his body. And the sores were oozing pus. So still, when he reached Jagannath Puri, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would embrace him forcibly. And Sanatana Goswami felt like he was committing a great offense, because all these sores with pus on them were just like oozing, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was touching his body. So Sanatana Goswami thought, well, it's better to commit suicide. And so he thought, well, the best way to commit suicide in Jagannath Puri is how? You throw yourself under the wheel of the cart. The wheels of the cart are very big, taller than this room. So if you go under the wheel, you're finished. I mean, there's no chance you're going to live. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if I thought I could achieve Krishna consciousness by committing suicide, I'd give up this body millions of times. But your body belongs to me, he said to Sanatana. Not only that, if I felt disgusted embracing you because you have your sores and pus all over your body, wouldn't that disgust someone, like to embrace someone with sores all over your body? Would you like that? But Lord Chaitanya said, if I felt disgusted, I wouldn't be a bona fide sannyasi. That's heavy. That means a sannyasi has to be pandita samadarshana. Because if he sees something nice, I mean, just like the other day, I was at someone's house and they had a nice cat there. You know what a cat is? Kitten? And I was petting the cat. Oh, how nice, how nice, how nice. But then if someone with sores came, I go, ooh. So you see, that's duality, isn't it? You're attracted to something, and you're repulsed by something else. And that's a conditioned soul's condition. that you, I mean, who would hold, let's say a cat had sores all over his body and pus coming out. Would you hold the cat and go like that? But if the cat has nice fur, just see how temporary the nature of this world is and how the attractions are. What if you just took a shaver and shaved the hair off the cat? You wouldn't do the same thing. It's the same cat. Just see. That's the attraction in this world. It's all based on skin disease, right? You know what skin disease is? Anyway, so that's a little sannyasi advertisement. So then, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if I felt disgusted, I wouldn't be a bona fide sannyasi. I'd be in duality. And he said, there's another reason, too, why I embrace you. He said, because you're like my children, Sanatan and Haridas Thakur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had that relationship. It's a very affectionate relationship, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. So Sanatan Goswami didn't commit suicide. But Sanatan Goswami was advised by one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates to leave so that no further offenses from his running sores would be committed. And that associate's name was Jagadananda Pandit. And Lord Chaitanya got angry at Jagadananda Pandit and said, Sanatan, you stay here for one more year. So Sanatan stayed for 1 year. And then after that, he went to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, he was given the instruction previously to write Vaishnava literatures and also to establish the holy places. So he established the temple of Madan Mohan, which is on this hill called Dwadasadicha Hill. Anyone seen Dwadasadicha Hill? You've been there. And the story of Madan Mohan, the deity, is very, very interesting. That deity previously was discovered by a Dwaitacharya. And that deity was being taken care of after Dwaitacharya discovered the deity, was being taken care of by a family in Mathura named the Chobe. That's a Brahminical name, the Chobe family. And this family had a very special way of taking care of the deity. They didn't put the deity on the altar. They put the deity right in the bedroom with their little son, because they considered the deity to be their son. So every time they would eat, it's not that they would make an offering on the altar. They'd put a seat for the deity, or whatever, a chair for the deity. And the deity would sit there at the table with everyone else. Interesting deity worship, isn't it? And also when the little boy would be playing with his, as they do in India, they play with marbles. You've seen that in India? They play with marbles a lot. Or they throw things. He'd have the deity playing with him. And so when Sanatan Goswami saw what was happening, he got very upset. And he told the Brahmin, this is not how you worship the deity. Put him on the altar. And so the Brahmin said, yes, Swamiji, I will do it. That night, Sanatan Goswami had a dream. In that dream, the deity appeared to him, and the deity said, why did you spoil all my fun? You know, because, well, how much fun is it to stand on the altar? You try that sometimes. Can you just stand like this all day long, you know? Not very pleasant. So, of course, Krishna is engaged in his pastimes, we understand. But this particular story illustrates that Krishna liked being and interacting with his pure devotees in a spontaneous way more than standing on the altar. So he said, you've spoiled all my fun. Why did you do this? And then also, this Brahmin who was worshipping the deities in Mathura had a dream. You should give me to Sanatan Goswami. So this deity, Madan Mohan, who was known as Madan Gopal at that time, was given to Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami had no money or facility to worship the deity. So it was described he hung it, the deity, in a tree. And he was just offering, not even real chapatis, but they would take wheat and bake it in the sun. And Prabhupada tells a story about, let me read a little conversation. When he first got the deity, he had a conversation with the deity. He said, I want to stay with you. And the deity said, Aditi said, I want to stay with you. And Sanatana Goswami said, what will you eat? And Aditi said, I'll eat whatever you eat. So after a while, the Aditi started to complain that there was no salt on the bread. And so the Aditi said, you know, there's no salt on this dried bread ball. And Sanatana Goswami said, I have so many things to do for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm supposed to write books. I'm supposed to preach Krishna consciousness. I don't have time. And plus, you're now asking for salt, but then you're going to ask for butter. And then you, later on, you're going to ask for sabji. So if you want these things, you better get them yourself. Such is the intimate relationship the devotee has with the Lord. So after a while, what happened is that this boat was stuck on a sandbar in the Jamuna, and the owner of the boat, his name was Kapoor, and he came to Sanatana Goswami, and he said to Sanatana Goswami, because he saw Sanatana Goswami was on the hill that was overlooking the Jamuna at that time, and he, normally in India, people approach the sages and the brahmanas for benedictions, you know, blessings. He said, Baba, help me, help me. And Sanatana Goswami said, how can I help you? He said, my boat is stuck on the sandbar. And Sanatana Goswami said, I don't know anything about this. I'm just a sannyasi. If you want something, just go talk to the deity. So he went to Madan Mohan and said, my boat is stuck on the sandbar. And a few hours later, there was a terrific storm. And the water kept pouring down. And eventually, the boat was raised from the sandbar. And the sandbar, the boat was freed. And the boat went on to Mathura. The boatman made a profit. And he used that profit to construct the Madan Mohan Temple. That's a nice story. So, let's see, wait, I got some more notes here. And so that's how the Madan Mohan Temple, what happened here? It's not working sometimes. These things don't work. It's interesting. Just give me one second. Okay, so the Madan Mohan Temple was constructed in that particular way. And then Sanatana Goswami had many other interactions with the other Goswamis of Vrindavan. And there's an interesting story when he was in Radhakund, went to see Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami one day. And Rupa Goswami had just written a verse comparing Radharani's braid in her hair to like a long snake. And Sanatana Goswami, when he heard that verse, he got very upset. He said, how can you compare Srimati Radharani's hair to like a long snake? You should correct this verse. So later on, Sanatana Goswami was chanting japa, and he saw near the Radhakund area, there was a group of young boys and girls playing, and there was one young girl with very, very long hair. And he looked at her, and he thought he saw, there was a snake crawling up her head. And he ran to her, and he said, there's a snake crawling up your hair. And she and all the other children started laughing at her. Because it wasn't a snake, it was simply her hair, the natural hair. And so when he ran up to her, he discovered it was Radharani. And so Radharani actually showed Sanatana Goswami that that was an appropriate comparison, that the snake and the hair looked very, very similar. There's another story of Rupa Goswami's wanting to make some nice sweet rice for his brother Sanatana Goswami. That Rupa Goswami was thinking, I want to prepare some nice preparation, but I don't have any ingredients. And then a little girl came and brought some milk and some sugar and some other ingredients. Rupa Goswami prepared it. And then Sanatana Goswami ate that, and he thought, where have you gotten all these ingredients? This is the best tasting kheer that I've ever had. And Rupa Goswami said there was a young girl who came, and Sanatana Goswami understood that that young girl was Srimati Radharani. So Rupa Goswami was chastised by Sanatana Goswami. How can you accept service from Srimati Radharani we're supposed to serve Srimati Radharani. That's another interesting story. Another interesting story occurred around the Manasi Ganga area in Govardhan, that Sanatana Goswami was chanting there, and there were so many mosquitoes that were bothering him. And so he wanted to leave. This is a place called the Chakaleshwara area, where there's the deity of Lord Shiva, Chakaleshwara Mahadev. And so Lord Shiva appeared to him and said, I will take care of all the mosquitoes, and he got rid of all the mosquitoes. And Sanatana Goswami remained there, chanting his japa and writing Vaishnava literatures. Perhaps one of the most important books that Sanatana Goswami has composed for us is called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and I'll just mention that briefly. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita details not the rituals of Krishna consciousness, but the what we call the ontology. That means basically what Krishna's identity is, what the jiva soul's identity is, and the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. And it details that in two different stories. One story is the story of Narada Muni looking for the best devotee of the Lord. And then they discover that the best devotee of the Lord, of course, is Srimati Radharani and, of course, her associate gopis. And the second story is the story of Gopakumar, where Gopakumar is basically looking for the best place. And he goes through various places on the earth planet, ultimately comes to the higher regions of the universe, higher and higher, different planets, goes through the coverings of the universe, the different eightfold coverings, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, and ultimately reaches the Vaikuntha planets, and then after the Vaikuntha planets, Ayodhya, and then Goloka Vrindavan. So in this story, we see the path of the soul coming to the highest spiritual goal. So in these stories, Sanatana Goswami elaborates on the highest aspect of Krishna consciousness, and all the other books of the Goswamis were basically based on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami. So today we are celebrating, or yesterday we were celebrating, the disappearance day of Sanatana Goswami. So any questions or comments? Questions about anything? Yes. Yeah, I mean, the eternal religious principle is serving Krishna, Jivara Swarupahai, Nitya Krishna Das, serving the Vaishnavas. There's a lot of eternal religious principles. Serving other devotees of the Lord, being compassionate to others. These are all eternal principles. And it's important for us to distinguish, or else we will become a sectarian religion. We don't want to become a sectarian religion. We have to understand the difference. I mean, just like, for example, Tilak. You'll find in different traditions, they have different Tilak in India. Like the Ramanujas, they have what? Very wide Tilak. And the Shamanandis, they have what? Does anyone know?
It's like the lines
here. Yeah, and they have a red dot also. So you'll see different types of tilak. What is, here's a question for all of you. So what is this portion of the tilak on the nose? Tulsi, that's good. But with other traditions, the portion that's on the nose is part of Krishna's footprint. So yeah, are they right, or we're wrong, or we're right, and they're wrong? What do you think? What? That's the foot. But the other traditions, this is also part of the foot.
Both are right.
So we have to really be careful about this sectarian, discriminatory mood where we think we're the best. It's not that Krishna, of course, is the best, I understand. But we should appreciate anybody's approach to God. And we should emphasize eternal religious truths, such as God is a person, that's another eternal religious truth. There's karma, that's another truth, right? Reincarnation. See, it doesn't matter. When you talk about truths, the truths do not change according to your religion. Whether you believe in karma or don't believe in karma, it's there. Whether you believe in reincarnation or don't believe in reincarnation, it's there. But other things changed. The style of dress, the hairstyle. I mean, there are many great devotees of Krishna who had long hair. Right? Isn't it? Yeah, to wait to chariot. There's an example. So it's not that you're going to go back to Godhead by getting rid of your hair. So why do you have short hair? No, but many monks had long hair.
Okay.
See if we can figure it out. There's an answer.
Oh.
Hygiene? No, you can wash your hair. Why do you shave your hair?
Yes, practical.
Well, it's practical. Practical have longer hair. I mean, are all you ladies impractical? Yeah, but is that an eternal religious fact? Sure, it saves time. Yeah.
It marks our lineage.
Yeah, it marks our lineage, but why? But what is the principle behind it? I'm trying to get to the principle. What? No, you can be... Actually, during Chaturmasya, you're not supposed to shave. That's even more renunciation. When it's really hot and you don't shave and your beard grows, that's more renunciation. Ah, I think you got it. Because the principle is to follow the instructions of the guru and the founder Acharya. That's an eternal principle. The hair is not. You know, short hair, long hair, no hair. That's not an eternal principle, because you'll find it differing throughout the ages. What Vaishnavas wear, how Vaishnavas dress. I mean, even Krishna in the Battle of Kurukshetra probably wore pants. Then that came as a shock. Otherwise, he would have tripped over himself. You know, or the dhoti would have opened up in the wind or something like that. It would have been a little embarrassing for Krishna. So, can you imagine Krishna going, sorry. So, the reason I'm talking like this is an important point to understand. The principle behind why we do what we do. And the principle is an eternal principle, like adherence to the order of the spiritual master. So Prabhupada said, you wear turbans, then that would be our style of dress. What do you think? So don't be so attached to the external. That's the point. But we're attached to the principle behind the external. Anyone have a question about that point? Yeah.
Why body should be a temple of the God?
Who does the body belong to? Who does the body belong to?
To God.
To God. Where does God live? And besides Goloka Vrindavan. Give you a hint. In the heart. So Krishna is in the heart, and so the body, it belongs to him. It's meant for him. So it's meant to be his temple, not in the sense that we worship the body. I mean, people can misunderstand that. Your body is the temple of God, okay. I offer my obeisances to your body. No, you offer obeisances to Krishna in the heart. Jaya Shri Shigur Natai. So because Krishna is seated in the heart region of the body, which is the temple room. That's the temple room. Yeah, the heart is the temple room. You know, the rest is like the bathroom or the... I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that joke. But, you know, that's the temple room. Because that's where consciousness is from. Like in the temple, all the consciousness of the temple emanates from the temple room, right? And there are other things going on, but the temple room is the most important thing. So that's why the body is considered a temple of God. And that's what the Tilak does. It marks the body as temples of God. And in different traditions, they would mark differently. Not only the tilak here in the forehead. And even in the Madhvacharya, we happen to be part of the Madhva Sampradaya, Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. You know how they what they would do when they gave initiation? Not only mark, what would they do? How would they mark? Yeah, they put the iron in the fire, you know, red to its white hot, and it was the signs of Vishnu, and they would go, shh. And you couldn't say, ouch. You could say, Hare Krishna. So that's how, so why don't we do that? It wouldn't be practical in the Western world. You know, I don't think we would have too many disciples. You know? They'd want to join another movement. So, now the reason, because these things are not eternal principles. They're different principles that are utilized to support the eternal principles. But they can be accepted or not accepted according to time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada makes that point in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says certain rules that are applicable in India may not be applicable in the Western world. So the Acharya distinguishes between what's an eternal principle, absolute, not eternal, but what's absolutely necessary in each particular location. Chanting, remember chanting, eternal, following the spiritual master is eternal, Krishna's God, that's eternal, we're part and parcel of Krishna, reincarnation, karma, all those other things. Does anybody have any questions about these points? Yeah.
And practicing virtues is also eternal?
Certain virtues, yeah. Yeah, actually, the godly qualities, yeah. Yeah, the godly qualities. Being kind to all living entities, being tolerant, being compassionate, these are also part of it. So when we learn the difference between eternal principles and temporary principles, we can reach out to other religions very, very well. And we can establish, in fact, the unity of all religions and have more peace in the world. This is the one thing that's lacking with all the religious, you know, wars that are going on now. They're just looking at the externals. Like they'll consider someone who's not a member of their religion to be an infidel or a kafir or, you know, even in Hinduism they have the same thing. Right? Now, one of the reasons that so many Hindus were converted was because of their attitude towards people who weren't Brahmins. It's a really interesting history in India. The Brahminical heritage, or those who were members of the Brahminical heritage, were very proud. And if people were born in other families, they wouldn't accept them into Hinduism. Like if someone was born in a, what they called outcast. You ever heard about that in India? Outcast family. And so what happened is people from other religions came to India and saw that the Brahmanas were actually discriminating against people based upon birth. And they took advantage of it. Many Christians and Muslims converted people from Hinduism or their basic tribal religions or whatever they were following at that point to some of the Western religions. So we find this principle of misunderstanding the difference between eternal aspects of the religion and temporary aspects of religion as one of this point is actually one of the things that causes the most dissension in the world today. Now, some people say, you know, you hear this all the time. People say, you should get rid of religion. Why? Because most of the world, they say most of the world's problems are caused by religion, right? It's interesting. Even if, like, they look at the Crusades, for example. You heard of the Crusades? But actually, the whole purpose of the Crusades was more economic than religious. Did you know that? It was economic, you know, because they wanted to get goods and money and all that other stuff. So people blame religion, but it's not religion that's to blame. It's people utilizing religion or misunderstanding what religion actually is. If people understood that religion means to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your might, and everyone is part and parcel of God, and everyone is the son of God, there would be no fighting between religions. But because people confuse these things with religion, therefore, or the rituals with religion, therefore you have the fighting. It's a very important point. Think about it for a second. So it is our duty as members of the sectarian Hare Krishna movement. No, as members. I've been humorous. But it is our duty as followers of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan to present the eternal aspects of religion to society. Because we're not going to get everybody here in Zagreb wearing dhotis. I mean, not even the men. Is it? I mean, it's just not going to happen, right? I mean, maybe it will, but, you know, I don't think so. But you're going to get people to it. Like Prabhupada said, if we're running society, we don't force people to follow our particular tradition, but we make sure that they're following their own tradition and understand the essence of religion. Prabhupada said that. It's not that we'll go up to someone with a gun in your hand. Of course, Prabhupada joked about it sometimes, but it's not that we're going to go up to someone with a gun in our hands and say, okay, shave your head, put on a dhoti, put on a tilak, or else you go to jail. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to say, chant the names of God, and you like to chant Allah, that's fine. Or you like to chant some Hebrew chant, you know, Shema Yisrael Eloi 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 Echad. Or if you like to chant some, what are the chants you have? Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. That's like Hari Bol. It's not actually the name of God. Hallelujah means Jai. Basically, it's Jai. So you got to get to God's name. Don't chant Hallelujah all day long. After a while, you know, chant Jehovah or something like that, whatever you like to chant. Glorify God. That's the essence. Even in the Bible, the Psalms, you know the Psalms in the Bible? They're the songs. They illustrate eternal religious principles, which is really interesting. Like one of the Psalms of David says, you should glorify God with cymbals in your hand, chanting the name of God. So that's eternal. What?
Drums.
Yeah, drums, cymbals, guitars. You don't like guitars. So, what's wrong? I mean, you use whatever is the traditional instruments in the culture to present Krishna consciousness. We can't be so attached to some of the external things. I mean, some of the nicest kirtans I heard have been led by Hare Krishna Das. Have you heard of Hare Krishna Das? Does he come here? And he uses an accordion, which is in a European instrument. The harmonium is also in a European instrument. Did you know that? France and Germany. Yeah, so utilize whatever to get people to chant, you know, do whatever you have to do. Use a flute, use a bass guitar, violin. I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had someone play a bass guitar to get everyone dancing. And a heavy bass guitar, not just boom, 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 but boom, 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 boom. You know, everybody was chanting, Prabhupada was laughing. So, I mean, of course, you know, in our temple, during the RT, we don't want to be chanting with bass guitar so much, but we don't want the Led Zeppelin here during Mangal RT, but because we have a certain tradition. I'm not saying get rid of the tradition. But when presenting our eternal principles, we can utilize other traditional elements that are not part of the, let us say, the Indian tradition that bring people to Krishna. I mean, I was just watching today. Someone sent me a link, a YouTube link, for a lady who's chanting bhajans in the United States. And it's really interesting. She chants the same bhajans, you know, we have, basically. like Jairam, Jairam, Jaya, Jairam. And nobody knows. She doesn't tell people what they're doing. So you have this whole thing like big businessmen, bankers, politicians, all Jairam, Jairam, Jaya, Jairam, 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 Jaya. And I'm going, wow. Isn't that nice? So here, of course, you have that yoga is music thing. And so we utilize these different means to bring people to the essence or the eternal aspects of Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada was on the planet, he had two sannyasis teaching yoga to the Shah of Iran's daughter. You heard about that? I think I told you the story. And Prabhupada was asking, and Prabhupada said, this is so nice, Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, it's like in like a pin, out like a plow. In other words, giving people Krishna consciousness according to their own culture. So don't confuse the cultural items with Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? No? Hmm? Yeah, another question.
Does Krishna appreciate my personal, honest attention in my heart?
Yeah. Krishna knows what's happening in your heart, and he appreciates your intention. Intention means, actually, intention, if it comes from the heart, that's what connects you with Krishna. So when we're chanting, we should chant with our heart. When we're serving, we should serve with our heart. Not simply ritualistically. So that's another problem with getting into too many of the external things.
Yeah.
That you think the external things are it, and therefore you think you're connected with Krishna, but you're not actually connected with Krishna. Because you're just doing the external things.
Yes. I don't think like this. Not if I'm very external and I'm not,
yeah.
It's not okay.
That's a fact. We cannot be just external. It has to be integrated, external with internal. And Rupa Goswami states that in the Upadeshamrita, he says, Achyahara prayasachapa japa nim agraha. He uses this word nim agraha to mean someone who does things externally but without the internal, ritualistically. We do both, of course. It's not that if we just do internal things without the external, then we're just basically hypocrites. We're hypocrites, say, I'm thinking of Krishna, and someone says, oh, would you like to cook the offering? No, I'm thinking of Krishna. Would you like to chant? No, Krishna's in my heart. I love him. I mean, I hear this all the time from people, especially some older devotees. I really love Krishna. You don't understand where I'm at. So why don't you do a little something? No. Krishna's in my heart. I'll never forget him. So we got to do both things. Both things, internally, externally. We have to be connected between the internal and external. So it's a good question you asked. But if we just do the external, that's Niyamagraha. You understand Niyamagraha? That means just rituals, just rituals.
Yes.
Like you say, every religion has its rituals. Like, there's arti going on, and at the same time, I'm not saying what, I don't know what the pujari is thinking of. So, but let's say there's a pujari there, he's doing arti, and he's thinking, oh my God, only 5 more minutes left, and I got to finish this. Why is the clock going so damn slowly, My arm is hurting while I'm waving it. I'm not saying that he's thinking that. Yeah, but I'm saying, let's say you have a pujari thinking like that and said, boy, I'm really hungry. I can't wait. Prasadam, I saw they really offered nice things to the deities during the last offering, and I hid the maha plate so no one else will find it, and I hope no one finds it before I finish arti. I question whether Krishna is pleased by such an attitude. Even though the arti may be dressed perfectly and doing the arti perfectly, but is Krishna pleased by the externals? No.
The externals, he's not pleased.
Well, yeah, the internal has to be there at the same time.
Yes.
Krishna says, "Patram pushpam pulam toyam yome bhakta priyashati." Offer me leaf, fruit, or a little water with love and devotion. If you offer Krishna a leaf, fruit, or water without love and devotion, Krishna won't accept it. You can go to Krishna and say, you know, here's a leaf, fruit, or water. Just eat it if you like. You know, I had to do this. This is my duty. You know, then you're treating Krishna like the checkout counter at the supermarket. You know, when you go to the supermarket, you go by the girl, and she says, "Oh, are you this much?" And she rings up the cash register. Because if you don't do that, you're a thief. So you think like that with the deities, too, that I'll have to offer to Krishna, because if I don't, I'm a thief. But, you know, I don't really like that, Krishna, but I better do it anyway, so I don't get a karmic reaction. And then Krishna, I doubt if he'll accept. Krishna's a person. Like, even when someone's cooking for me, you know, people cook for me sometimes, and they bring me something, and they say, "Maharaj, here's your dinner." Poo. And I say, "I'm not going to eat that. Your attitude is way off." Because your attitude, even materially, your attitude changes the molecular structure of the food. Did you know that? You'll get poisoned. If someone hates you and they cook for you. Now, people, that's another point. People probably sometimes say, you know, we shouldn't eat in restaurants. I know that's a little controversial. Why? Because the people who are cooking in the kitchen, what you don't know what their consciousness is like, right? And their consciousness goes in the food. Even though there was that study of that Japanese man, how consciousness affects the water molecules. You seen that? That if someone thinks hate, the water molecule looks really, I mean, the patterns in the molecules look really bad. And someone thinks love, the patterns are very beautiful, like snowflakes. So what to speak of someone in the kitchen, in the restaurant kitchen, you don't know what's happening. And maybe a scene from Macbeth. You ever heard of Macbeth? Shakespeare? Boil, double trouble, cauldron burn. No, you don't know that. So therefore, that's why Prabhupada said that. Everything Prabhupada said had a reason for it. It's not just a ritual that Prabhupada was being cruel to us. Well, you can't eat in restaurants. Why so cruel? You can't follow. You can't break the four regulative principles. Why does Prabhupada pick the worst things to give us? Why doesn't he just say, you know, no asparagus, no beets, no what else? Don't you like? You know, why doesn't he give us a nice four regulative principles? But there's a reason. There's a reason behind everything the prophet said. It has to do with the modes of nature. So, yeah, consciousness affects. And so Krishna understands that too. When you offer to Krishna something, he sees the consciousness in the food. And if the consciousness is not right, he may not accept. And we've had experience in worshiping Radha and Krishna that when the cook's consciousness or the pujari's consciousness is not right, Krishna actually throws the plate off the altar. You know, you go in to take the plate out after the offering and you find it, everything thrown all over the place. I've seen that. Yeah. And you think, who did this? It was Krishna. Of course, that may not happen all the time. But Krishna doesn't have to accept. So it's love and devotion that Krishna... Why Krishna accepts the leaf? Why was Krishna accepting the bread balls made by Sanatana Goswami under the sun? Because he had the devotion. Okay, any other questions? Otherwise, it's getting late. Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. As long as the attitude is, you know I'm doing this out of duty, I may not have the right consciousness now, I pray to Krishna that as soon I will have the right consciousness, yeah, then Krishna will accept. I mean, it's not that Krishna expects us in the conditioned stage to always have the right consciousness. But we're doing it out of duty for the purpose, not just because we're resentful. If you do something resentfully for Krishna, he won't accept it. Just like if someone does something resentfully for me, I don't want to eat. I'd rather not eat. Yeah, it's just not, it's not pleasing, isn't it? I mean, maybe people are so attached to their tongues, they'll eat any damn thing. Like Prabhupada said that. He said, my disciples, they'll eat any damn thing. But as far as my attitude is concerned, if the attitude's not right, I'm happy to fast. And so Krishna feels the same way. Okay, I think we have to end. Is there prasadam for everybody tonight? Or? Oh, we missed the RT. No problem. Okay, you can chant. Okay, thank you very much. Tomorrow I'm heading to Govardhan. So everyone should bless me with the darshan of Giriraj. Oh, Sanatana, just one more story about Sanatana Goswami, about Giriraj. But Sanatana Goswami was going around Govardhan every day. It's like 21 kilometers. And then he was very old. And still he was going around Govardhan. Krishna came to him and he said, don't have to do this anymore. You're an old man. Because he had arthritis, so many problems like that. And Sanatana Goswami said, no, I'm still going to go around. You're not going to tell me to give up my religious principles. So he was arguing with Krishna. Can you imagine that? And Krishna said, no, stop. He said, no, I'm going around Govardhan every day, whether you like it or not. And Krishna was thinking for a second, how do I get this guy to stop? So then Krishna produced this Govardhan Shila with his own footprint on it. And he said, look, Govardhan Shila is not different from Govardhan. You circumambulate this every day. Don't have to go all the way around, 21 kilometers, 22 kilometers. And so Sanatana Goswami accepted that, and then every day he would circumambulate this Govardhan Shila. That shows the intimate relationship the Lord has with his devotees. Even they can argue sometimes with each other. We shouldn't argue. It's not that you go in front of the deities and argue with Gaura Nitai. But for pure devotees, they actually have some arguments with Krishna. Interesting, isn't it? So, all right, that's enough about Sanatana Goswami. So all glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Sanatana Goswami, ki jai. Gaura Nitai, ki jai. Śrīla Prabhupāda, ki jai.